trades. It's our goal to provide you with resource information and tricks of the trade that you definitely need in order to pursue a career in entertainment. And we also hope to inspire, encourage, and motivate you by interviewing people that are currently making their dream a reality in show business. And we hopefully you're going to call in today. We encourage you to call in and ask questions of our guests and at any time during the show. And I have the computer right here. So when you call in, I will take your call directly. You don't have to go through someone screening the call. So get a pen and paper, 818-602-4498. 818-602-4498. And I will see your little phone pop up here and we'll take your call. And by the way, if you like the show, you found that it helped you in some way, we'd love to hear about it on the forum. And that's on a link on the BBS Talk Radio page. And you can post and read comments and also check out some of the other great shows that are offered on BBS, like Curvy Fashionista, hosted by Jacqueline Britton, and Out There, which is hosted by Jeff Rector. He's on right before me. And you can also email us at Priscilla@questionreality.us. Now, we have a very intriguing guest today, and you all have been emailing me, when is she coming on? When is she coming on? Well, she is on today, and her name is Mary Lou Belli. And she is among, so she has so many titles, I got four pages printed out. It's just too many titles. But most of all, she's a wonderful person and a natural teacher, which is what we are going to hear today. She's going to teach us some things that we need to know to pursue a career in entertainment and things we need to do and not do when we go on auditions. But first, we are going to talk about our spotlights, and our first spotlight company is going to go to Hollywood OS. And as you know, I love Hollywood OS. It's where I got started when I did background work. They're a wonderful casting company for background. Lovely people. Angela owns it, and David is one of the account reps over there. And they are always casting for great movies. Right now, they're currently casting for Grey's Anatomy. I think they may not be. I think we're in hiatus, aren't we, Mary Lou?
I think we are.
She would know. They were casting for Grey's Anatomy and the Katherine Heigl movie, but they are always casting for great projects. So if you go to their website, HollywoodOS.com, they have all of the current features and shows that they're casting for, and you get a week free just to kind of try them out. And also, if you tell them that you heard this ad on Question Reality, you will get their wonderful book, which I love, love, love this book. And I've told you why so many times. I keep telling you, but it's true. It's called Extra Work for Brain Surgeons, The Guide to Working in Show Business. And it's a $30 value, and you will get it for free. And I cannot tell you how great this book is, especially at the end where they have all of the productions where people have written to them and said they were ripped off. They didn't get paid for things. They have all of the companies that do scams. They have everything that you could possibly imagine. Oh, we have a caller. Oh, so soon? I haven't even got Mary Lou on yet, and there's a caller. My God. Well, definitely check out Hollywood OS. And, you know, we're going to go ahead and take the call. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to ask a question. I'm trying to listen to Priscilla Leona, but I'm not getting anything but a song playing over and over. Is there a way to... I'm on the air right now?
Yes. And
oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
I wanted to ask a question of Mary Lou, and I just tried to get on, and is it okay to ask her a question now, or should I wait?
No, she can hear you, and I can hear you, and if that's a technical question, unfortunately, Sam is the man to do that. I am so sorry. I do not know
okay.
why you keep hearing that, but go ahead and ask
okay.
the question.
I was wondering, as far as an actor just starting out, if you think you want to kind of go into mostly comedy acting, but should you focus on that, or would it be a good idea to study all kinds of acting? You know, just as far as spending your time on one thing or getting a well-rounded education, I was wondering about that.
I think if your focus is going to be comedy, it's nice to be an expert in something. Now, that's not to say that you can't, once you are established, do almost anything you want. But in terms of if you think comedy is your forte, and if you think that this is where you would like to see yourself on the big screen or small screen, I would say, you know, there's lots of avenues for studying and for getting involved with other people who are good at comedy. There's improv groups, there's the Groundlings, there's Acme, there's Olympic Improv, where you can meet like-minded people. And then, you know, very often a casting breakdown will come out, and having those sort of credits, you know, that you are in a comedy club, that you're in an improv group, speaks volumes to a casting director who wants to seriously consider you for a part, that you have experience in comedy.
Okay.
I also highly recommend the Harvey Lembeck Comedy Workshop. It's a great place to study. And there's a man named Scott Sedita who wrote a book called The 8 Characters of Comedy. And Scott Sedita also has his own acting studio in Los Angeles, which I highly recommend studying at.
Okay, so you do think it's best, I mean, you do think it's good to study other kinds as well, but just focus on the comedy? Is that
I would, and another avenue, if comedy is your strength and where you see yourself getting work, I would say, you know, if you think you're a person who could do stand-up, go for it. It's a great, mm-hmm. it's a great place to showcase yourself.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Mary Lou. Appreciate your help.
Oh, very happy to.
Thank you very much, caller.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was our very first caller for Mary Lou. I didn't even get to introduce her, but I guess all those emails I sent out really, really helped, because most people know now who Mary Lou is. But she basically is an Emmy Award-winning producer, writer, and director. And she just finished directing her 7th consecutive season of Girlfriends, which is a show I love, on the CW Network, as well as her webisode series called Three Way. And you definitely have to check that out. And I wish I had the website address. Is it just Three
Way? It's www.threewaytv.tv.
ThreeWayTV.tv. And I watched the last season of that, and I was hysterical. I just loved that little lady when she had her obsessed girlfriend following her around. That was the season finale,
it
right?
It was the season finale.
So I'm so excited. I can't wait till it is coming back. Am I right?
We sure hope so for a second season.
That is now let's talk about Girlfriends. You mm-hmm. were there working on that for 7 years.
7 years.
Now, were you, I noticed that, and I know a lot of people have asked me that, they say that they see a lot of different directors' names on the episodes. They see repetitious names, but they see a lot of different people's names. How is it that a director is chosen to direct a particular episode?
Well, you know, in terms of situation comedies, two things happen. You're either the season director or you're one of many directors. The derogatory term is the director du jour. Oh. But I'd like to think that, you know, if you come back consistently for 7 seasons, that you're considered one of the in-house directors.
You're done.
But basically, it's a choice by the producers as to, would it be better to have only one director during the whole season? Because the cast likes it. Girlfriends has sometimes focused more on one predominant director certain seasons than others. And I've also been the season director of some other shows where I was the only one directing all the episodes. But on the writer-producers, or the showrunner, as we call them, it's usually that person's decision how to choose the directing staff. Sometimes it can be one, sometimes it can be a different director for every episode. And that sometimes numbers up to 22 episodes in one season. I've been the director du jour.
So they don't...
and I've been the house.
So they don't at the beginning say, okay, for this particular episode, we're going to have this director, that director, and then we're going to rotate them.
Well, it's a rotation. Very often I'll do 3 or 4 in a row.
Okay.
You know, come in for a group of episodes. It depends. It's varied. I've directed many, many shows, and it's it's been different on all of them.
Yeah, we just couldn't figure out how. Is it just they're sitting at lunch one day and a producer and a director comes up and says, well, I've directed this and that and that. I'd love to direct an episode of your show. And they say, okay, well, what about next week? That doesn't happen.
No, usually there's a season when it usually happens. And it's actually beginning right now, or at least it used to happen right now. If upfronts or when the new season for the following year is announced in May, then usually June is what they call the staffing time. And they first staff the writers, then they staff the directors, and then basically it's about agents calling back and forth with business affairs for that network and deciding which date you're going to get. I mean, I've had, like last year on Girlfriends, I had all my dates assigned. I think I was going to do 3 in September and a couple more in and, you know, 4 more in January and February. And then they call back and said, oops, one of the directors is pregnant. Will you switch some dates? And, you know, it's a family.
Right.
So, you know, absolutely fine. So, you know, we switched some dates so that she could direct earlier in her pregnancy, and it worked out just fine.
So why don't you take us through, a lot of people are so curious who don't have the option of knowing a casting director. Take us through the process of what a casting director does, or what a director, let's do director, because you're casting director as well. So as a director, take us through from the very beginning, the table read, for lack of
Fine.
A better
okay.
word.
Okay, so
to
for,
the end.
On a multi-camera sitcom, which is different from a single-camera sitcom, a multi-camera sitcom is very much like, it's a 5-day process. It rehearses like a play for the first 3 days, and then cameras come in for the last 2 days. The first day is called the table read day, and basically you do literally that. You read around a table, and everyone who is anybody basically listens to it, from the network executives to the studio executives to all your designers and crew that need to hear it early on. You usually rehearse that day as well, and it gives that first day after the writers have heard that first table read, they go and rewrite. On the second day, you basically are rehearsing again all day a newly written or revised script, something that we say in the business has been punched up. And we basically, at the end of that rehearsal day, we do a run-through only for those writers. Then on the third day, you come in and rehearse yet another revised, punched-up script, and that, and at the end of that day, you do a run-through, kind of like a mini dress rehearsal, but without the dress, without the costumes, for the network executives and the studio executives. And then on the fourth day, you come in to your, hopefully, what we call the final draft, and you start scheduling, per se, what the cameras will be. So you do a camera blocking rehearsal for every single scene, not necessarily in order of the show, and you practice it that way, and then you go home after you've done all those scenes. It tends to be a fairly long day. Also, on a show where you might need to have a special effects or a very complicated scene that's not going to shoot in front of the audience the next day, you might want to pre-shoot that scene. So Thursday or the fourth day usually is a camera blocking and or pre-shoot day. And then finally, on Friday you come in. It's usually a later day. You don't usually start early in the morning. You usually start midday. You review what you did on Thursday with the cameras, and then an audience comes in, and early in the evening, to hopefully not too late in the evening, you tape or film that show in front of a live studio audience whose laughter is actually being recorded live as you do it.
Now, is that with every sitcom, or is that with some sitcoms that you have the live audience?
With almost every multi-camera sitcom, the whole idea of doing it multi-camera, and this was actually Desi Arnaz's idea for his wife Lucy, you do it live in front of an audience with that laughter being recorded live.
Now, some people may not know the difference between a multi-camera show and a single camera. Can you explain
the
difference?
It's very easy. A single camera show shoots like a movie. It basically, you out of order, you shoot, you rehearse one scene, and then you film it with one camera. Sometimes there's an extra camera. But basically, you're shooting all what we call coverage, your different shots, your master shot, your three shot, your two shot, your over the shoulder shot, your close ups, your extreme close ups if you're doing a soap opera kind of look. But basically, you're shooting those one at a time. The whole idea behind a multi-camera show, and you go scene by scene by scene. So you might get a fifth of the show done on one day, a fifth of the show done the next day. And, you know, usually you shoot it over 5 days, and it's a full day.
And an example of that, in case you want to visualize that, would be a show like The Office. Am I correct?
The Office, Malcolm in the Middle. There's lots of shows that have
that. That's single camera.
Yeah. My Name is Earl is a current one that's on the air. Now, and Everybody Hates Chris is a single camera show. Then you have a multi-camera show, which is the week I described. And basically, you shoot all of that show, except for possibly those few pre-shoot scenes, live in front of an audience. So instead of taking 5 days to shoot, because you have four cameras shooting simultaneously, you're getting that same coverage of your master, your two-shot, your three-shot, your over-the-shoulders and your close-ups, by four cameras that record or film or tape simultaneously. So it's basically you do it in 4 or 5 hours, hopefully. And it's very efficient, and you do, and because you've rehearsed it for 3 or 4 days, it hopefully it's like recording a really well-rehearsed play. So you're not hopefully doing multiple takes for performance. Hopefully the performance is perfect every time you see it, and sometimes we do as little as 2 takes for every scene, and we move on to the next one.
Oh, I love that.
Well, it is, and it also keeps it very fresh for the audience, because you want their laughter to be spontaneous. And trust me, if you've seen a joke, and this was Desi's actual motivation for designing this for Lucy, if you've seen a joke 10 times, it's not as funny. The first time it's funny. The second times, you know, you'll laugh again. Yeah. But the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, you know, it gets a little old, a little stale.
Do they have a person out in the audience? Are they prompters? You know, they're like, laugh.
No.
They don't do that anymore
hold
the card.
I'll tell you what we do have out in the audience. We have what we call a warm-up person. And sometimes that's a person who's a DJ and keeps some music going. But very often it's a up-and-coming stand-up comedian. On the first show I worked on, our our warm-up guy was a guy who's now famous named Bob Saget.
Wow!
Bob Saget was the first warm-up guy in the first show I ever worked on in Hollywood.
Oh, cool!
But basically, what a warm-up person does, it keeps the audience entertained between takes and while you're moving cameras from one set to another, or during the time that the writer and producers are conferring with the director, and then the director is giving notes to actors in between takes. But also, prior to starting every scene, the warm-up person will remind the audience what just happened. Because if you're seeing a recording of a show that usually will play in 22 minutes, and you're breaking it up into little 5-minute scenes or 3-minute scenes or sometimes 30-second scenes, you sometimes go, now what just happened? What's happening? And or sometimes you, if you haven't been a person who has been watching the show, sometimes you need to know some backstory that will make you clue you into what's happening, which will often give you a better idea of the story, the characters, their motivation, their interaction with each other.
Correct. Good. Well, a lot of, now, while this is going on with the rehearsal, the actors, I've been asked this question, and someone sent me an email to make sure I asked this, and I thought, oh God, I hope Mary Lou doesn't mind this. Someone said, Do they provide all, you see all these beautiful clothing that the actors have, like on Girlfriends. My God, you know, I was watching that and I thought, wow, you know, her outfit. Do they provide the clothing, or do you wear, are the actors required to have? Should people prepare in advance, like a whole lot of money to buy clothing
if they get
cast?
You won't need any clothing at all.
Okay.
Basically, if you get cast, occasionally they'll ask a man to bring in a suit that they particularly like, and if they ask you to wear your own clothes, they will pay you a fee for wearing your own clothes. But 99% of the time, a wardrobe
is provided for you.
A wardrobe is provided for you and designed for you, or picked by a designer or the person who is head of your costume department on that particular show.
Okay.
And some shows have philosophies that you never wear a costume more than once.
Ooh.
You know,
do you get to keep them?
No, you don't get to keep them. But I've been on shows that have been canceled, and sometimes they sell the show, the clothes at the end. And, you know,
fun.
If I knew that I had the same size shoe as one of the actors on the show, you'd believe that I'd rush there and try to buy that at a discount. Some of them actually sell them at the end of the season, if they know they're not going to use them again, to some thrift stores that specialize in
memorabilia, celebrity memorabilia.
Well, not even memorabilia, just show clothes.
Show clothes.
In fact,
wow.
I have a son, and I was just working on a costume for his middle school play today, and inside the pocket was a very, very expensive Italian suit for a 14-year-old boy. And inside I found a little tab in the pocket, which was, I knew it must have been a costume, because it was a tab that customers use regularly, let's say to tape a tie down to a shirt so it doesn't move during a take.
Oh.
And I thought, this is a wardrobe. This was from a thrift store that specialized in show wardrobe.
And I see you'd know that. Most people would go, oh, that's a damn piece of tape. Let me throw that away.
No, I knew what it was.
And you would know that. See?
Yeah. Well, it was the backing to the adhesive. I knew what it was.
Ah, you knew that. Now, I want to talk about Three-Way, because that was so hysterical. You directed that.
Mm-hmm. I directed the pilot in about 6 or 7 episodes.
This is a fantastic. I highly recommend that you watch this program. And again, if you go to threeway.tv.tv. You can watch this live, and it is so funny. I had tears rolling out of my eyes. I have my favorites. I'm not going to tell Mary Lou who they are, but some of them just were hysterical. We have another caller. Okay, let's take that call. Hi, you're on the air with Mary Lou.
Hello, Priscilla. This is Alan. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Alan. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. Just calling, I have a few questions.
Okay.
First, I want to say that to you, your show is amazing. I love it. I love the energy, your guests, the subject matter. It's perfect.
Thank you
Wonderful.
Very much.
Great.
I appreciate that.
But I've recently had an opportunity, and I spoke with a producer and writer regarding a role. And being the first project that I'd ever be involved with, and I'm non-union with and do not have an agent, when is an appropriate time to ask questions regarding to how much pay, when do I need, if I am cast in this movie, when is the pay received, and how long will I be required on set? Because, you know, as they say, don't quit your day job.
Right.
So I want
especially if
to,
you have a
I
good
want,
one.
Yes. So I don't want to quit my day job, but I want to try to find a schedule as to work around being, and how long am I going to be on set, and if I can take a leave of absence from my job. But regarding like pay-wise, is there an appropriate time to ask a certain question regarding pay?
Well, let's ask Mary Lou that. What's the answer?
You know, I unfortunately have never worked on a non-union show, but I would say the moment someone says they want you, that's your door open to say when and for how much. And I think getting that discussed immediately is probably in your best interest. And I don't think it's unusual for you to be able to expect answers to those questions, so that, A, if it is a non-union show, that you could take a leave of absence. I would say for the efficiency of the show, and I always think this is a good rule for anyone who is starting out, put yourself in your boss's shoes. So if he needs to efficiently, as the producer of the movie, work an 8 to 10 hour day, which is probably what you're going to do on a non-union film to make it efficient and to get as much coverage and footage as possible efficiently in a day, then I would say you should expect that the days you are shooting will be full days, especially if you're heavy in the movie. And I think, I don't know what you can expect as a wage, but if this is your first time in a movie and this is the first time you're getting some footage of your own that you will then use as a showcase tool to get your next job, I would say probably take what they give you, because basically you're and make sure that you get it in writing, that you get a copy of it. You want a copy of it, and you want to know the date you're working, and you want to know how much you're going to be paid. But realize that this is an investment in yourself and your future career. So the most important thing that you get out of this is a copy of it so you can show it to somebody else.
Right. It's a significant role.
Did I say congratulations?
Congratulations!
Well, thank you. Yes, he's pretty much told me, just speaking with him, that he would love me in this role. But I just don't. You know, I have other responsibilities that I have to take care of. So I just want to make sure as to when do I expect a first check? Is it years afterwards?
First of all, I would ask when you were going to get paid, and I would expect that the answer would be somewhere between 30 to 60 days after filming has ended. I mean, to be perfectly honest, the unions don't ask for more than that in terms of when they expect payment. So that's what I would expect, 30 to 60 days. And make sure you have the address of the production company so that
yes.
if they don't pay you, you know where to find them.
Yes. Very important, because, you know, starting out in non-union, to be quite honest with you, a lot of people, and that's why I was recommending that you get that book from Hollywood OS, because a lot of people do, unfortunately, get ripped off. They do the production, and then they don't get paid, or they sometimes don't even get a copy. A lot of times when you answer ads, say, in a certain magazine, and they say copy credit meals, where you're not even getting paid, you don't even get the copy. So you definitely need to always get the address, phone number, and call and make sure that it's legitimate.
Okay.
So,
may I also recommend two other books? Scott Sedita, who wrote Eight Characters of Comedy, has a brand new book that just came out within the last week. I think it's probably on the Los Angeles Times bestseller list by now. And I think it's Scott Sedita's Guide to Making It in Hollywood. I know his name is in the title.
And spell that last name.
Sedita is spelled S-E-D-I-T-A. And the other book that I would highly recommend is by Judy Kerr, and it's called Acting is Everything. And it's less a craft book than it is all the information you need at your fingertips. It's a fabulous, fabulous resource book.
Right.
So I highly recommend it back. And Judy Kerr's last name is spelled K-E-R-R. And did I mention I wrote two books?
Oh, yes. We have her two books for sure. One of them is called, and you definitely, while you're in the bookstore getting all the book, get all your books at once. And I tell you why, because you really should know the business aspect of acting. If you choose to be an actor, you are choosing to be an entrepreneur, you are choosing to be a business, and you really need to know the business aspect. So read before you go out and jump into non-unions or any other project, because you really do need to know what you're doing. You have to have some sense of that, or else you're going to get ripped off, or you're not going to advance as fast as you'd like. One of the books that Mary Lou Belli is involved with, she was a co-writer for Acting for Young Actors. And you definitely want to get that book if you have a child and you're thinking about getting your child involved in the business. And the other one is, and this one, oh my gosh, I'm so glad she gave me a copy, because I've been wanting this forever. It's called The Sitcom Career Book, and it's written by Mary Lou Belli and Phil
Ramuno,
R-A-M-U-N-O. And I believe you could get these if you went to Amazon.com.
Amazon.com, and also, you know, there's a specialty shop in Los Angeles called Samuel French, Samuel French Bookstores, and another one in New York called The Drama Bookshop, and they specialize in showbiz books. So if you want to spend hours just looking at a shelf and saying, what book is going to just really help me? Especially, you know, there's probably help, especially for a non-union actor doing his first film.
Right.
So, hey, listen, good luck with
that. Thank you so much.
You know, have a great shoot and enjoy the money you make doing it.
Right, and call us again, okay, caller? Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Is that it? Is that it? Is that the end of the call? I never know when I'm clicking if I'm going to crash the whole system. But yeah, you definitely want to get these books, especially if, you know, I was watching a show. I don't know if you watched it, Mary Lou, but it was Danny Bonaducci's I Know My Kid Is a Star. And a lot of people are like, why are you watching that? I find every reality show fascinating. I'm a reality show fanatic and a sitcom fanatic. And I found that so many people could have learned so much from that show because not enough mothers or fathers or parents who want their child to get started really know what's involved in the business side of it. That's why if you want your child to get started, you want to get a book first. And Acting for Young Actors is a great book, I would imagine. I haven't read it, but if Mary Lou was involved, it's a great book. But you want a book because a lot of times you don't want to get labeled a stage mom. And we're going to talk about that in future episodes. But
can I just say that my co-author on Acting for Young Actors is a wonderful, wonderful acting coach, acting teacher, and author all on her own named Dinah Lenny. And also, you know, just because you brought it up, the genesis for the sitcom career book, which was really my first book, came from the fact that we, my co-author and I, who are both sitcom directors, probably 200 to 300 episodes between us that we have directed, would have actors come to the set who have booked the job. It's a big deal, and they weren't prepared. And it's not because they weren't serious actors. It's not because they weren't trying their best. They just didn't know what was expected. And we really wrote this book for them. This book is for people who have Oscars, for people who are Broadway stars, for anyone who has never set foot on a sitcom set. It's basically the inside information you should know in order to do your best work in this business when you come in, because it's a very specialized field and it moves really fast, and a lot of is expected of you in those 5 days.
Correct. There, as a matter of fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mary Lou, but sitcoms are very different than film and very different than theater and very different than commercials and very different than industrials. And you really need to know, you know, how the people work from the producer and director to how things run smoothly from beginning to end. Is that correct?
It's true. And, you know, we have a whole vocabulary that is particular only to sitcoms.
Exactly.
So when a director or producer will give you a note, and if you have that kind of blank stare, like, I have no idea what you're asking me to do because I don't understand the lingo of this particular field, it really will hurt you rather than help you. So in every chapter, there are vocabulary words that are mentioned and explained in the text, and that the sort of as a review for every chapter, we put these words in a sentence in the sitcom career book so that you can say, if a producer said this to you or a director said this to you, would you know what they mean, and would you be able to do the next take with the change he or she wanted of you because you understood what the director was asking?
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking in the book now and I see exactly what you're saying. It starts from being asked a question and I guess how you would answer that appropriately and what that particular word means. For example, on film, a lot of times they use, you know, oh, that's that, for example, that's the martini shot, or that's the Abby Singer shot, you know, and people would not, if you don't know that, you know, you're just kind of going to get frustrated. You're going to be very frustrated not knowing what these things are.
You know, the Abby Singer shot, I knew what the Abby Singer shot was before I actually worked for Abby Singer.
You worked for Abby
Singer was my UPM line producer on the the second show I directed called Major Dad.
Oh, my God. So it's true. She always called the shot and it wasn't the last one, right?
Right.
She called the last shot of the day, right? Wasn't it?
And Abby's actually a man.
Abby's a man. I did not know that.
An elegant, lovely, wonderful, efficient.
Is he still with us?
Oh, he's still with us. Although I don't know that he's actively working as a UPM anymore, but left a legacy and a name of a shot behind
him. Yeah, I mean, you can't get better than that, leaving a name in a film term name.
Yeah.
Now, you're also a casting director.
No, I'm actually not
a casting director. My God. I went to a casting director workshop, and I had assumed that she was a casting director. I am so sorry. I thought you saw all these little actors coming. And I had lots of questions from them.
You know, and I love casting directors, and there's lots of great ones out there, and I admire. You know, I think it's not a job I'd be really, really great at because
you're too nice.
Casting. No, I think casting directors who are really good at their job kind of have Rolodexes in their heads.
Yeah.
And you might say, I want a person like this, and a great casting director can just not only know the talent level of the person there whose name they're about to mention to you, but then spit out 20 names at you about this person would be perfect.
That's true. We have another caller. My goodness, I'm not going to get through Mary Lou's credentials here. She's so popular. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hi. This is Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air with Mary Lou Belli. Do you have a question?
Yes. I was wondering, I was wondering about the casting director workshops and when she thought that, what stage in your career that you thought that would be very effective to do those?
I think the workshops are
This is Jonathan
effective.
Shaw, by the way.
Hi, Jonathan Shaw. Jonathan, I think that casting director workshops are effective anytime.
I can barely hear you.
I think that anytime you have an opportunity to meet someone who can give you a job, you are increasing your luck factor if you can show them how good and talented you are. So I highly believe in attending casting director workshops and getting your face and your work in front of them.
Are you calling us from planet Earth, Jonathan? Because we can barely hear you and there's all kinds of activity going on. Are you calling from a cell phone? Hello? I guess we lost Jonathan. Okay, Jonathan, well, if you could go to a landline, that would be fantastic. Okay, so Mary Lou has directed, she has over 100 episodes to her credit. She directed Living with Fran. Oh, my God, who loves Fran Drescher?
I do.
I love this woman. I used to watch her on The Nanny, and she always had the best clothes, and she has the best body, and I'm like, why can't I be Fran Drescher? And her comedic timing was just perfect.
She's brilliantly talented and works so hard on the set and has a knowledge of almost every aspect of the business in terms of sitcoms like I've never seen before. It was a pleasure doing Living with Fran. She's so talented and so funny. And you know, when someone is so good at what they do, they kind of raise everybody's game. So you basically do your best work because it's expected of you, because they're doing their best work.
Right.
So it sort of just brings the level so far up. You know, I felt like that on Girlfriends, too, with Mara Brock-Akil, who created the show. Saying, are we doing our best, and can we do more?
As a director on sitcoms, who is the ideal actor? What do they do for you? What do they do?
Well, you know, the ideal actor for me comes in on time and comes in prepared. Because once someone comes in, first of all, that they show up and they're prepared, then we get to do all the other fun things. If they've already done their homework, then basically we get to then layer on top of that. If a person doesn't come in knowing their fundamentals, like their lines, or even more appropriately, what they want to do with that character, then basically we're starting from scratch. So anyone who comes in, and then the other aspect of an actor that I really, really like on a set is a person who is what I call low maintenance, who doesn't need to know that constantly how good they are. I'm assuming, you should assume, if I have cast you, if you are on that show, if you are being paid professionally to be there, you are exactly who we want, and we think you're fabulous. and always assume that you're unbelievably good unless I tell you so. And I will tell you so. If I want something different or I want to play with you or try something, I will do that. I have what I call my little, can I say?
Yes.
I have my little bullshit scale, I call it, that your talent level must always exceed your bullshit level. So, because I'll put up with a lot from anybody as long as you're more talented than you are a pain in the neck.
I love that. And I imagine you run across a lot of that in the business. My God. And so basically, if they do all of that, that is a star in your book and you'd love to work with them. And most likely you'd remember that actor.
Oh, I remember an actor who comes in, does their job and goes home is my favorite kind of actor. And it's a short list, but there's a list of, I never want to work with that person again. And trust me, everyone has that little list, and they share it.
That's
so
right.
There's, you know,
town. What's on that list for you? What do they do that really is not going to get them on your good side? Showing up late.
Showing
obviously.
Up late. Not being prepared. Being rude to other actors. And you know, I love actors. I really love actors. So I always go, why are they behaving badly? And very often it's fear or some other thing that is stopping them from doing their best or making them put up roadblocks to doing their best work. So I always ask myself, why are they behaving this way? But if I talk to you and you still continue to behave that way, you know, I call it my life is too short list. Life is too short to have to put up with you.
Right.
Because there's too many really, really talented people who haven't gotten the chance. You know,
right.
For any given role, especially with a good casting director bringing in actors, I sometimes see 6, 7, 8 people, all of whom I would be happy to have in that part. And I only get to choose one, or we only get to choose one.
Right.
And if you come on the set and you don't realize it, you can be replaced.
Right.
You can be replaced by, you know, 6 other people I saw for this role who were fabulous, and I wished I could have cast them all, but
mm-hmm.
I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the part, and you don't deserve it now by the way you're behaving.
Right. You should always maintain a sense of being humble, because you're being monitored and judged at every single thing you do. Even when you don't think you're being watched, you are. And it's their job. And you should always conduct yourself in an appropriate manner and always be humble. And no name dropping. Boy, that's a pet peeve of mine. I don't know. I run into a lot of actors and they're on the set. And one thing, and I don't know if you run across that, but one thing not to do on set is to talk badly about a director you worked with, how bad he or she was, or a producer, because it is not something that is going to stay between you and the other person. And I hear that so much, and I'm thinking, why are they doing that? Are they insane?
Mm-hmm.
And would you say that that's part of behaving badly, not to do that?
Don't do that.
Do not participate.
You know, if you don't like someone, keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself. Don't participate in rumors. And so you have also directed Misconceptions, starring Jane Leaves. Oh my God, who is better than her? I could listen to her accent. She was on Frasier. She played Daphne on Frasier.
Yeah, she was wonderful.
And I did not see Misconceptions, unfortunately. All the other ones are huge.
It was fun, but short-lived.
Okay, but I would have loved it because I love her. Eve, I haven't watched that one, actually. No, that's with hip-hop artist starring Eve. And I imagine she's fun to work with, huh?
You know, it's so funny. I'll tell a little anecdote. Before I got the job, the script supervisor who had done the pilot had called me, and I said, actually, and she said, you're going to love her. I said, I don't know if I'll love her. I'm going to be petrified of her. I got her CD. This is a really, really tough city, Philadelphia girl. And my friend Ellen Deutsch, who actually is speaks a lot in the sitcom Career Book, I quote her a lot, said, you'll love her. She'll love you. She's down to earth. She's real. And I loved working for the 3 season I directed Eve. It was a great show. It was created by a talented woman named Meg Deloche. And Meg just created a perfect vehicle for Eve's talent. And, you know, when someone who is an expert in one field, being a Grammy Award-winning singer, rap artist, to come into a field where she isn't known. Now, she had done, I think, one of the Barbershop movies before we had started Eve. Maybe both. I can't remember the sequence of that exactly. But a sitcom is very different. You don't rehearse it like a movie. You rehearse it like a play, and you basically, in front of the audience, do, you know, a 22-minute play where you do the scenes a couple times. Mm-hmm. And there was a point during near the end of the first season where all of a sudden you saw Eve go from a person who was excellent at it and didn't, you know, and didn't ever give herself enough credit for how good she was at it, to a person who went, oh, I love this. And you could just tell there was a relaxation about her. And the second and third season, it was just a joy to be there. You know, she also had a huge amount on her plate the first season. I think she was recording and her fashion line had come out. But we had a great time all three seasons. But I think there was a special joy the second and third season when she
saw
did this.
The transformation.
The transformation of a person saying, oh, I love this. And I know I'm good at it.
Oh, so,
I swear.
Yes,
I swear.
Adding a talent.
Well, also, there were times when I would look at the producer, the writer-producer who would be sitting next to me while we would watch scenes, and I would say, did she just channel Lucy? And we said, okay, here is this African-American girl from Philadelphia channeling a white redhead from 20 years ago. And I'm saying, yeah, she just channeled Lucy. She is so funny.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she is. I've seen her on a couple things, and she seems really funny. And we have, like, 3 minutes. I want to get everything in about Mary Lou. She's acted in musical theater and soaps in New York, which, my God, that could be a whole episode. I want to hear you sing one day. We're going to have to ask you to beg you to come back.
I was 16 going on 17.
Oh, that sounds so good. Now, see, you need to put an album out.
Oh, no, thank you.
You need to do your own musical theater CD.
I sing in the bathtub.
And so you were in theater and you came here and you've directed over 75 productions to her credit. I imagine any production I throw out, The Grapes Are Ash, you've done it.
No, but no? Actually, my daughter just finished a production at the Performing Arts High School here in Los Angeles, and it was marvelous.
Fabulous. Yeah, I did that.
She played one of the youngest Joad, the daughter.
Ah, mm-hmm. Rosa Sharon.
Rose Sharon's...
Oh,
no,
the little,
a little,
oh, the little,
one,
the little tiny... One. I never remembered her name.
She's tiny like me.
Tiny, a little petite thing. Now, you say that you have many awards. The Prism Award, you have... What did you win your Emmy for, by the way?
I won my Emmy for a documentary that I did with 9 other women.
What was it called?
And it was called A Community of Caring. And each of us, 10 of us, took a nonprofit organization, and we did a short 5 to 7 minute film about this nonprofit organization and how it contributes to the community. And then it was woven together with a narrative of a mother teaching her daughter how to give back.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it was really, really
and
well
where
done.
And where can we see that? Is there any,
you know,
place
I don't know. You know, it aired on Santa Monica Cable Television. Nancy Malone was the exec producer. And it was beautifully done. I mean, each little film was a gem in and of itself. My section was on a group called Consumer Credit Counseling Service, which is a nonprofit organization. And on my shoot, 3 people asked if they could sign up for Consumer Credit Counseling Service.
Oh, great. You got the business. Now, we have 1 minute, and I want to get this in. You have a citation from the late Mayor Tom Bradley for your work with abused children. I know that you do want people to call and be mentors. And to what is the number that they can call for that? You gave me a number for to read illiteracy.
There's a group I read for called Reading for the Blind and Dyslexic, RFBD. And it's a complete volunteer organization, and I read for them once a week. I just put in an hour.
And that is what you should do, too, if you want to get on Mary Lou's good side. No, you should do it because you're a good person. Do you know the number off the top of your head?
I don't know their number, but you can look it up. They have chapters in almost every major city.
Okay. And lastly, you got something exciting coming up. You're going to Japan. What are you going to be doing? My God, you do so much. She lectures frequently throughout the United States and universities like FI, NYU, Northwestern. And you're going to be in Japan. Let's end with that.
I will be judging the Sapporo Shorts Film Festival. And it's the third film festival I've judged, but I don't think I've gone quite as far before. I'll be in Sapporo, Japan in September.
Fantastic. And she's on the advisory committee for 3MinuteHighSchool.com. So you want to know everything, Mary Lou? I guess we could go to IMDb. Do you have your own website?
I have two websites. I have www.sitcomcareer.com and actingforyoungactors.com.
So you go there and you find out everything else about Mary Lou. Mary Lou, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. God bless your little heart. You're such a good woman. And thank you for listening to the show. Have a great time, and we'll see you next week on Question Reality.